Members, this is an informational hearing, so I'll call it to order. And as an informational hearing, there'll be no roll call for attendance. We'll be taking no votes on this. We'll hear the Representative Sandstead present the bill, listen to the testifiers, ask questions of any of the testifiers or the bill author, and hear any other business from the committee, and then we will adjourn. So, having said all of that, why don't we go, I don't know, is there a House file on this?
No, there's not, not yet.
So, Representative Sandstead, do you care to, would you please inform us of your bill and what it does, or call a witness to do that for you?
Absolutely. Good morning, everyone, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present this information to you. This bill that you're going to hear today, or the information you're going to hear today, was actually a bill introduced in the first special session. It did not have a hearing just due to the length of time of a short special session and the focus of what we needed to do. And because it wasn't able to be addressed during that time, I do want to, you know, focus either on a second special session or just to have the information out for people to be aware of should we need to move this quickly. So again, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present the legislation today. The bill before us will make mine workers and those in related jobs eligible for additional unemployment benefits if they've been laid off due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Current unemployment benefits have been tremendously helpful to workers, as have the additional $600 weekly payments provided under the Federal CARES Act. But right now, mine workers and their families are facing an imminently critical situation. In my communities or on the range, MinTac, Hibbing Taconite, KeyTac, and North Shore Mining have either reduced operations or have idled completely. As a result, over 1,700 workers have found themselves out of a job. With no turnaround projected in the near future, time is running out for many Iron Range families, and they're worried about how they will pay their bills and put food on the table. This bill would provide additional unemployment insurance benefits to laid off workers in the iron mining industry or those who work supplying goods or services to the industry. If a worker has exhausted their regular unemployment benefits, they'd be eligible to receive additional benefits until May 1st of 2021 for a maximum of 26 weeks of additional benefits. Additional benefits paid under this bill will not affect an employer's experience rating for future tax purposes. Applicants who are eligible for other federal unemployment benefits or federal trade readjustment assistance would not be eligible for additional benefits. The iron ore made from taconite pellets mined on the Mesaba Range is used across the globe in products made of steel. The Iron Range was pivotal in shaping our nation's manufacturing industry. Now, with the global economic recession and demand for steel down, we don't know when the mines will resume operations. While we continue to work towards diversifying our economy, and I really have to say a significant investment in broadband would be super helpful, the current reality is mining, or iron mining, is the bread and butter of our local economy. When mining slows down, it impacts the Main Street businesses. Now, the people of the Iron Range are proud of our heritage, and we are resilient. We've experienced tough times before, and sadly, we're no stranger to slowdowns and recessions. There is a difference, though, with what we are experiencing. While we've had downturns in our economy before, we've never had it simultaneously with a tailspin in the timber industry and a devastation of our small business communities. So unfortunately, we're facing a devastating trifecta in the downturn of taconite, timber, and tourism. I'm hoping with some perseverance and grit, sometimes when accompanied by a bridge like the one that I'm presenting today, we'll be able to rebuild and again strengthen our communities. The global economic slowdown due to this pandemic has impacted workers from many industries due to no fault of their own. While we're optimistic about the turnaround, as is everyone else, we see the stark economic realities before us. And that's why the benefits of this bill are so important to helping folks get through these tough times. I also need to say that while it seems unusual maybe to push it out a little bit further towards, you know, the 1st of May, it's really important that we get these workers through the cold, hard winter. And if you haven't been to the Iron Range, you need to know that the cold, hard winter oftentimes goes through April and into May. This past summer, it was June, or this past spring, my neighbor was cutting his grass while at the same time I was snow blowing a pile of snow across my yard to help it melt. So we really need to help these families get through some very, very difficult times and get them back on their feet. And again, this is really a safety net. This is being put in place in the event that all other opportunities or all other benefits are exhausted and there still isn't the pickup that we're anticipating. We're hoping that the economy comes back. We're hoping that the businesses are able to get back online. But we've seen this before, and we need more than hope right now. We need action, and we need assurance that we've got a safety net in place. And with that, Mr. Chair, I am happy to answer any questions or turn it over to our testifiers.
Why don't we go to your testifiers, and then they can all stick around, hopefully, for questions from the committee members. And I think you first had on your list the United Steelworkers, John Arbogast?
That is correct.
Like I said, we're pretty close to what.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify. My name is John Arbogast. I am the District 11 staff rep for the United Steelworkers out of the Eleth office. My functions are, I represent the five USW taconite mines on Iron Range and assist the local unions with the day-to-day operations. I am was the former president of Local 1938 at MINTAC. I worked at MINTAC for 26 years until I accepted this opportunity to work for the steelworkers out of Pittsburgh, and have been through this many, many times. And I'm here with Danny Pierce, the president of Local 2660, the Keewatin Mine, and he'll testify after me. Why this is so important is U.S. Steel has basically announced that the shutdown at Keetac was called indefinite. We really need this extension in order for these families and these workers in this community to stay in this community, because without it, and once the UI insurance runs out, they don't have many choices. They're gonna have to leave the area, go elsewhere to find jobs, and that'll decimate the families, the workers, the community. Every mining job basically creates two other jobs outside of the mine. So if there's, you know, 400 workers at Keetac, the 2-to-1, we're talking 1,200 total people that'll be affected if they have to leave the area. All we're looking for is a chance to buy some time for everything to turn around. It's so uncertain with the COVID in the South and the auto plants. Yeah, they're back up now, but at a limited capacity. And if the COVID takes over the UAW again, are they gonna shut the plants back down? We're seeing a little return to work at MINTAC, but heavy taconite is still shut down. KeyTac is shut down indefinitely. And it could all change as this, you know, are we in the first wave? Are we in the second wave? And we just need the opportunity to help these families so they don't have to move. You know, on the Iron Range, like Julie said, timber just got hit with Verso closing in Duluth. There's not a lot of good things going on, but if we're able to extend these benefits and give the opportunity for families to be fed and clothes for children and everything that they need, we just need, we need that extension. So there is money coming in. I mean, these, we have a very, our workforce up on the range is transitioning. Most of the old timers that worked in the mines are retired and are gone. So now it's all young people coming into the mines. And with young people, you got young children, young families, and Keewatin, for example, just a very small town. And we'd really like you to consider this. I would appreciate it. And I'll take any questions if you got any.
Thank you. I think you had Denny coming up next.
Denny Pierce.
Oh,
he just got a phone call.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I see in the chat one of the members asked a question if Cliffs is still running, and there are a few people that are working currently, but everybody has been cut down significantly. Cliffs right now is what we are calling HIVNGTAC and UTAC. So they have an anticipated date that they're projecting they'll be able to start, you know, calling people back. But that's, again, a hope that hasn't happened yet. It's, you know, still just being talked about, but we're seeing a second wave now of COVID start to hit, or our numbers starting to climb again. So I don't really know whether that's going to happen or not. I haven't heard from anybody in, from Cliffs in the last couple of days to say one way or the other.
Sure, Julie. Chris Johnson, the president of Local 2705, which is HIVNGTAConite. With an anticipated return to work date, the general manager, Ed Lantan-Dress, and the company is saying, well, yeah, tentatively, but with this COVID reinsurgence and worried about UAW and the big three and whatever car companies, if it hits them again, they're going to shut the plants down. Then HIVNGTAC won't be back to work, so.
And for members, I think the important thing to hear is the word tentatively. And that's such a precarious word here on the range. So, again, that is why I'm putting forth this language, this proposed legislation. We are hoping for the best, but we are preparing for another scenario.
What?
Don, is the... is Mr. Pierce available?
Yeah, slide over, Danny.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairman. My name's Dan Pierce. I'm the president of Local 2660 out of KeyTac. I'm a third generation miner here at KeyTac. My mother and father both retired here from National Steel, which is now currently KeyTac. As of today, we have 380 active members here at KeyTac. And like John kind of related to, a third of that is members that are under 3 years. So they're brand new members, brand new families, being introduced into mining. And as we go along here, as time gets spread out a little bit, these new families and new members are going to start getting concerned on where they're going to find work, if we don't go back. The hardest part, to this whole scenario is we don't have a start date, like all the other facilities that did get idled. So this could turn into another 2015 scenario to where, this facility is down for a year or 2 years before it comes back online. So for us to be sitting here and hoping for the best, our option is to try to apply for extensions for unemployment to keep people on the range, keep their kids in school in our school districts, and along that to try to keep them fed and keep heat in the buildings or in their houses while they're on layoff. As we move forward here, there's a lot of talk again about COVID-19 coming back through for a second wave. So that could extend things even further. So the chances of us getting back online just gets hindered even worse if we get hit again here on the range with COVID-19. So I'm looking for an extension or a possible extension of 26 weeks to give a little safety net if we don't come back online. We do have some people applying to go to school and get them in the system to at least stay on the range tentatively for the plant to open. But as of right now, just like Julie said and Mr. Arbogast said, we don't have a tentative start date like the other facilities. And that's what really worries me about people disappearing. It took a lot of hard work and a lot of resources to get us tooled back up, to get our facility to back to 380 members to open it up in 2015 so we could run. So I'm looking for any support. I'm more than willing to do the legwork to provide you the information that we need. Being that we're on Zoom and stuff like that, it makes it a little bit more easier to communicate compared to running to the Capitol like we did in 2015, three times a week to try to get something passed. So I'm looking for all your guys' support and gal support for a 26-week unemployment extension that would run until May of 2021. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we have Adam Dunner as the last testifier as far as I have on my list. As Mr. Dunham.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm here if you have a minute for me.
I do.
All right.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney and committee. And my name is Adam Dunnock. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. And here today on behalf of the 27,000 members we represent across six states, specifically in Minnesota, approximately 12,000 members. I want to first thank Representative Sandstead for carrying this bill and her support for Northern Minnesota and the industries that she represents in her region. I want to talk just for a minute about the mining industry. I think Representative Sandstead said it well when she talked about how the mining industry drives a lot of the rest of the economy in the area, and the construction part of that industry would be certainly a big part of that. And so the overall downturn that they're seeing is going to continue to lead to a construction slowdown. So when the miners aren't working, when the plants aren't running, there's less maintenance, there's less operations that need to happen. And a good number of our signatory contractors and members do that work on a daily basis. So construction is oftentimes seen as a canary in the coal mine when it comes to recessions and recoveries. And we've seen this off and on in our state. And we just want to talk a little bit about how important it is for both this bill to proceed, both for the workers and the plants directly, but also the indirect jobs that are impacted as well. So as we've seen COVID impact our industry, we've had what some have called a hurry up and stop model, where some of our contractors are busy. Some of our members are staying very active and working right now, but they don't really know what's going to happen in the next month or 2 months or 3 or 6 months in front of them, which is why we're constantly up here advocating for both stimulus and opportunities for future jobs when it comes to things like a bonding bill and other things that other pieces of legislation that can help put people to work. But in the case of knowing that parts of the economy aren't going to be running or are going to potentially be put on hold for a while, then we need that assistance. And so that's what we're up here advocating and asking for, unemployment insurance assistance, and asking that it applies to the industries that are also affected indirectly. So I want to thank Deed for their work on this process. It's obviously maybe a little bit more complicated to determine eligibility of why someone's unemployed if your industry is impacted more indirectly, but I know that some major progress has been made on this issue. I want to thank them for their work and ask them to continue to do so, and just continue to talk with urgency about how important it is to do something this summer in a special session, if not in the next week or so, as Representative Sandstead alluded to, maybe in a future special session, and would like both the House to act and also urging the Senate to take up action on this item as well. So with that, I'm happy to be around and answer some questions too. Thank you for the opportunity.
I have a question for you, Mr. Dunnick. Sure. Why would you threaten us with future special sessions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't want to enjoy this nice weather we've had this summer. We want to make sure we're working.
Members, I will open it up for questions. I don't actually see any hands up, so the staff will have to inform me.
Mr. Chair, I believe Representative Sundin was first.
Representative Sundin.
Hear me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'd like to thank Representative Sandstead for bringing this issue up. It's very important, and just for the edification of people, the iron mining industry has a specific training for their facilities. I hold an MSHOC card, as does every miner on the iron range. And I hold mine as a construction worker, so I can enter those plants and work there along with thousands of others. So just to echo Mr. Dunnick's comments, thank you again for recognizing this. But I do have some questions as to who would be eligible, construction workers that help maintain those plants during shutdowns and other periods of maintenance. I'm just wondering, is there a cutoff point? Are the people that typically work in those mines that are laid off now, let's say they have a 50% of their income is derived from maintenance on those facilities, I'm certainly have to wonder what protection is there for those people specifically, and is there a cutoff point? Is there a formula to secure extended unemployment benefits for those people as well? Question mark.
Representative Sanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually going to turn that one over to Deed in terms of how they would be determining or kind of facilitating that, if that's okay.
Thank
you. Certainly. Someone from Deed here?
I'm on mute. Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Jim Hegman. I'm the UI program director. So we did a similar extension back in 2015, as the other testifiers have mentioned. At that time, we follow obviously the language in the provision, which was copied more or less from 2015. So we would apply the same thing. The language in the proposal gives us the instructions that the individual, the worker that's not a miner in this case, so say a construction worker, would be working for a contractor that was providing services, and then that work stopped because of cessation of activities in the mine. So we would apply the same standard that we did back in 2015. I can't answer exactly who that means because the scenarios change a little bit each time, but we do have experience with that from back in 2015.
Representative
Sandin,
do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you very much. I'll research a little bit more to put my entities and Mr. Dunnick's mind at ease on this issue as well. So thank you. I'm looking forward to being educated on a little bit more before I support this, or when I support this. Thank you.
I have on the list at the present time, in this order, Representative Gunter, Robbins, Daigle, and Moran. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sandstedt, I appreciate what you're going through in that my district has lost 17,000 people since 1960, and I hate to think that the miners would abandon the mining area and go to the city for jobs. And I appreciate putting a limit to the number of weeks that they can get, 26 weeks instead of unlimited almost. Was almost nine months. I appreciate the bill. I think that I share your pain and that I don't want to see the people in the mine leave their communities to come to the cities and not come back and leave that industry in complete disarray. So I appreciate your bill.
Thank you, Representative Gunter. Representative Robbins.
Representative Robbins, you need to be unmuted.
So sorry. I appreciate your bill as well, Representative Sandstedt, and your passionate advocacy for your community. My uncle worked in the Great Lakes shipping business, and I do have some understanding of the importance of the taconite and mining industry to that region. And, you know, I really, growing up in an area partly in northern Michigan for part of my life where there's a lot of mining as well, I understand the impact when the mine shut down of how it really devastates whole communities. So I really do understand that. That being said, I do have some questions because my understanding, and this is my first term, so I wasn't here last time they did this extension, but my understanding from why this was done in the past was because the economic problems were tied to tariffs or something steel related that was very unique to this industry, whereas right now, we're in a broad economic crisis where everything's been shut down. And I just have to say, I'm struggling with why we are doing this for, I see a great need in this industry, but in my district, we also have construction workers who have been laid off. And we also have many businesses who have already closed their doors. I had another bakery close last week. And so I just struggle with doing this really huge help for this industry, which I get is super important to our whole economy. But the difference is that right now the entire economy has been shut down, not just this particular industry. So if you could address that. And then I also have two specific questions for you or someone at DEED. Were the mining employees...
Robbins, why don't you let them answer your first question?
Okay, sorry.
They'll likely forget the second or third question by the time they get done with the answer. So
thank
who
you.
Would like to answer the first one?
I'll take it. So thank you, Representative Robbins, for that question and for that statement. And I just want to say this in response. Number one, I have to represent my district, first and foremost. So it's my privilege to bring this language before you. These are my friends and my family members. This is the community that I live in, and it's my elected responsibility to advocate for them. At the same time, I can say I understand that we are, in many ways, no different than the rest of the state because everybody's experiencing a downturn, regardless of what you're in. The difference, however, is that on the Iron Range, we do not have the diversity that the rest of the state does. This is it. This is our bread and butter. We are a taconite timber tourism industry. And as I mentioned earlier, we have a disastrous trifecta right now. All of them are down. And we don't, even for Keetac, 381 people, 381 union jobs. There aren't 380 jobs, 381 other jobs in some other industry to send them to. So that means that people do not have a choice but to leave. And leave for what? Leave where? I mean, everybody's struggling. And that's not right. And why do we do this? Because it's the right thing to do.
We help each other out. When we are in a tough time across the nation, across our state, we help each other out. And I've stood alongside other people as they have asked for help in building their communities back up. And we're asking that we stand together just as Minnesotans, together. And we all do better when we all do better. And we're not looking for a handout, we're looking for a hand up. And we need to be helping one another. And that's why I'm doing this. And I did try to make it time bound, so it isn't indefinite. I don't have an answer to your question about tariffs in the past. I do know that there has been a lot of changes federally in terms of tariffs, so I don't know if that comes into play or not. And again, what I am proposing is a safety net should all other measures fail. And currently, the state has some opportunities. The governors from across many states are gathering together and asking for federal support. So it could be that there's enough provision from other places that this doesn't even come into play. But again, we hope for something like that, but we plan for different.
Thank you.
To Mr. Chair. Representative Robbins?
Yeah, so I just wanted to ask, I understand that the cost of this would be around $8.5 million. And I'm wondering, I understand from the governor's letter that we're already borrowing money for the state unemployment trust fund from the federal government, but I don't know the amount. So how much is the state already borrowing? And when we pay that back, I'm assuming this $8.5 million we'd have to borrow from the feds. And what does that do to the general fund when we our deficit going forward, when we pay that back? Does that come out of the general fund? So cuts, we're already looking at a deficit next biennium. Would this just add into cuts we have to make in other parts of the budget? If you could address the fiscal impact also specifically to Deed, how much are we already in arrears? That would be helpful. Thank you.
Representative Robbins, why don't we have Deed answer both those particular questions? Mr. Hegman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Right now, we're very close to borrowing. We're probably going to cross over to borrowing a little later this week or early next week. So that's a normal part of it. Always sounds really scary. It's a normal part of unemployment insurance across the whole country. It's a federal-state partnership. States are expected to carry a balance in their trust fund sufficient to kind of handle a normal rainy day. Not a pandemic necessarily. So we expect most states will be borrowing. This is pretty normal. We did it in the last recession as well. So we'll kind of cross over to federal funding probably next week sometime. The exact day, I'm not sure of at the moment. Currently, the borrowing has no interest attached to it. So the money that we borrow to keep paying benefits to unemployed workers in Minnesota will not accrue any interest to the state of Minnesota. The repayment of the amount that we borrow, we'll see how that goes going forward. Obviously, Congress will be interested in what approach to take since it's a pandemic and not a normal recession, if there's such a thing. The repayment of it is not coming out of the general fund. Repayment of the borrowing is done through the taxing structure that the UI program has in place. So it's an entirely separate funding structure. And if things work as they normally do, tax rates will eventually go up a bit for employers throughout the state, and that will be used then to start to build the trust fund back up from a negative basis going forward. So just a reminder, we're continually receiving money as well, so we will be this is a tax collection month for the UI program, and taxpaying employers will be paying their UI taxes in July for the second quarter. So I'm not sure I'm quite answering the question. I guess I just want to make it clear that it's not funded through the general fund. It's a separate funding mechanism and a separate repayment mechanism.
Mr. Henry, if I may interject here, when the next question, when Representative Robbins is done, could you please explain how much we borrowed in the last great recession we had and how long it took us to pay us back, if you know that offhand. So Representative Robbins, what was your next question, your follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hegman. And I do want to start by saying how grateful we all are for the fantastic work the UI department at Deed is doing. You guys have done incredible work to pull off what you have done, and I just want to recognize that and thank you for you and your team doing heroic work in the state. But I would like to know the amount you expect we are going to be borrowing from the FREDS. I do understand that it's paid through the employer system. Would this money that we're talking about in the Sandstead bill come just from the mining employers, or would everybody's taxes go up for that? And also on the broader point about how much we're borrowing from the federal government, how much did taxes go up last time, to Chair Mahoney's point? When you look back at how much we borrowed, how much did that cause employer UI taxes to go up last time? And I'm done. Thank you.
Mr. Hagman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So a couple of things. You're asking probably the hardest question we could possibly try to answer right now. One of our answers is, you know, if we knew. Oh, well, first, I would like to say thank you, Representative, for your kind words about the program on behalf of the 330 of us that have been working a lot of hours to try to help out Minnesota as we can. We appreciate those kind words. It's been a difficult challenge for all Minnesotans, and we certainly don't want to emphasize ourselves too much. But we hope that we feel like we've done the best we can, and we hope that we've made the difference that we're trying to make. It's almost $5.5 billion to over 600,000 people has been paid at this point. So we're hoping that helps to keep Minnesota's economy rolling along and families in a good position as we move forward. We really wish that we were smart enough to predict how a pandemic moves through the economy and how it affects the unemployment insurance program. That would be great. We kind of roughly can do it a little bit for small recessions. But something of this size, we honestly just can't model it very well. We don't know how to do that kind of thing. We are now at, as I just mentioned, 600,000 people have received benefits and over $5 billion. The previous record for a given year was 250,000 people and $2.8 billion. So we did in 4 months what, in the midst of the Great Recession, we didn't even do in a full year. We have a really hard time understanding or predicting so where we end up, because we really just don't know how to model this, and we're asking to try to figure that out. It's just a deeply complicated area, obviously. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I don't have the numbers for how much we borrowed right now in the Great Recession. I know that we were around 800 million at the deepest point of it, but it's a day-to-day balance, so we're constantly receiving money and then paying money, and there would be days when our balance would have been nearly zero, and other days as we get to the end of our before we start receiving money again for the tax cycle, where it would go quite negative and then it would recover a bit and go back and forth. So I don't have an easy way to answer that question for you. I'm sorry, I don't have that information with me.
Why don't you just to allay fears to our members, I know over the years that we borrow billions of dollars from the feds and then for a short period of time and pay it back at no interest. And how it's done, it's not difficult to understand. It's just a long process to understand it. So if you could put something together to compare some of the past recessions, because I've heard a number of our members voice concern about how much we're borrowing. And I'm very confident that our system works and works very well. But could you send something out to Travis, and he'll get it out to the members, about how the system works and what you typically, if you can figure out what you borrowed in the last one, that would be great, as opposed to where you think you'll be borrowing this time. But just some information for our members. And with that, I'm going to go to the next questionnaire, which would be Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious if Representative Sanchez or somebody else could answer on lines 1.6 through 120. They have it says the 50% of the greater wages credit from iron ore mining industry. Just wondering if that would then go to shipping, freight. You know, how far down the line are we going here? Because I'm sure the shipping industry and the rail industry are very much affected by this right now, too.
Representative Sanchez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's very much in line with the question that Representative Sundin had asked earlier. I don't have a great answer for you. Maybe Deed can weigh in on how that was handled before, but I understand your question. I think it's in line with what Representative Sundin had asked as far as how far down it goes.
Mr. Hickman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. My recollection is sort of the way that we think this through is kind of concentric circles around the mining industry, with the center being, you know, the mines themselves, and then each circle outside of that would be an industry or an employer that is delivering services to those industries, to the mines themselves. I don't honestly recall whether or even if we saw any additional unemployment insurance traffic in 2015 from the shippers. I don't recall that. I know the mines themselves own the railways that move back and forth, so we would have picked them up. But I don't recall that we did actually see any real traffic on that end of it. And it may be that because it may be, I'm just kind of thinking it through here, that the actual shipping companies have their employees located in a state other than Minnesota. So they wouldn't be covered under the Minnesota Unemployment Insurance Program. They might be covered under, say, Michigan or wherever the employment is headquartered. So I don't have a clear recollection any longer, but I believe that's one of the factors.
Representative Cagle, a follow-up?
No, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, what was that, Representative Cagle?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Moran?
Thank you, Chair Mahoney. So my question is to Representative Sundin. Is that, you know, I do understand the dilemma that the Iron Range is under, and the impact it's having on your community. And looking at, you know, how will folks be able to, you know, pay their mortgage, the rent, you know, buy groceries and all the things that you are concerned about. And I understand that we did this in 2015, but here we are in a pandemic where everyone, most people, lots of folks have lost their jobs. You know, are very concerned about their mortgage, are very concerned about their rent and how they're going to feed their children and what tomorrow is going to look like. There's a huge burden on most people, the state of where we are. And so, you know, with that understanding, I'm just, you know, trying to, you know, folks in my community, in my district that I represent, you know, it's like a tsunami for them. It's really, really bad. And so I'm just trying to understand why there has to be just the exception for the Iron Range when there are so many families out here that need that extension, that need the support and the help of the state. And why, and even Mahoney, why do we need, why, you know, I understand, but why do we make a 26-week exception for the Iron Range when there are so many other families out here suffering, too, under this pandemic?
Is that a question for me or for Sandstead?
Sandstead.
And
I hear you. I hear you. We're all in this together, you know, but, you know, as a state, are we really all in this together? Because I think, you know, the people in my district should get 26-week extension, too.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you very much. Representative Moran, as I stated before, we are all in this together, and we are all experiencing difficulty across the state. And I'm not saying other people aren't entitled. I represent my district. The difference between my district and your district is equity and opportunity. There are vastly greater opportunities in your communities, in metro communities, in suburban communities, in diversification of employment. We do not have that on the range. We do not. We continue to work for that. And as I said earlier, we need significant investments in broadband to start pushing us towards diversifying. This is something I work very, very hard for. This should never be us against you, my community against yours, or anybody else's. We are all in this together. And if you look at legislation that I've supported, I don't just support only Iron Range legislation. I support what's good for people across the state of Minnesota, inclusive of your district too. But now my community, the Iron Range, we need help, we need support. And again, this is only a safety net. Prayerfully, there will be, first of all, we'll be called back. People will be called back and the jobs will come back and the industry will start up. That would be wonderful. But if it doesn't happen, there's always the hope, the possibility with this pandemic that there'll be federal assistance. So this language won't even be necessary. However, if all other opportunities fail, all other options fail, we need to stand by the communities on the Iron Range. And we should never be pitting one against the other. I stand with you, and I would hope that you would stand with me on this. It's what we do for Minnesota. We help each other out.
So maybe this question is too big then, because if we were not in a pandemic, there will be a diversity of jobs available, but there just isn't right now because of the pandemic. So 2D, what would it look like for the state to extend unemployment for others also beyond whatever the timeline we have given folks now at the state level for unemployment? If we wanted to do another 12 weeks, what would that look like?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sanstead.
Thank you. Representative Moran, I need to be very clear that even without the pandemic, we still do not have diversity in our economy. We are still a mining. We're a natural resource-based industry, a natural resource-based community. And right now, everything has been pretty much knocked down. And pandemic or no pandemic, we're still in a tough place when it comes to diversification. So I think it's great, I hope Deed can answer your question, but I just want to make it very clear that the pandemic hasn't made us less diverse. We have been struggling on the Iron Range for decades for an equitable opportunity in an economy.
I understand the struggle. I do. Deed could respond.
Mr. Hagman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. There currently is a federal extension in place that provides up to 13 weeks to extend benefits. We've also just triggered onto another extended benefits program called, it's actually just called Extended Benefits, which is 13 weeks after that. So there are some options under the federal provisions right now for those individuals who exhaust all their regular UI benefits under Minnesota law. In addition, we currently have something called the pandemic unemployment assistance for workers or generally self-employed people who are not covered by the regular unemployment insurance program, and that provides up to 39 weeks. So there are programs available, I think, that would assist workers throughout the state who find themselves running out of unemployment benefits right now.
So, Mr. Chair, and 2D, so it sounds like there are already provisions in place to do what Representative Sanstead is asking us to do. That's what I hear. So we may not even need this bill. We don't need the exception because there's already provisions in place. Is that correct, or am I hearing that?
Representative Sanstead.
No, to the 2D.
2D.
Mr. Chair, I would like to answer after Deed as well.
Mr. Hagman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Yes, there are extended benefits in place. Those will end under the federal law in December of this year. And at that point, there's currently no other extension to the extensions, if that's a phrase we can use. So that's how the current extensions that are in place would work. And
thank you. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I was originally contacted about this issue and putting or attempted to put forth legislation on this, we had an end date that was October. And because of the pandemic and because of all of the changes that are taking place at the federal levels, sometimes these dates are changing. So today we just heard from Deed that we are looking into December. There's already work being done that could push us even further. And so as I have said from the onset of introducing this language, this is only a safety net if all other factors fail. So again, Representative Moran, having lived through this type of an event so many times in my life, we can have all the hope in the world, but that does not put food in the mouths of families. So we have to have a safety net in place should all other pieces fail. My hope is yet that we don't need this legislation. The reality, historically, we have learned we probably will need this legislation.
I do understand.
Let's see. Did you have a follow-up there, Representative Moran?
No, just to represent some said, I really do understand, you know, about the inequities and not having greater opportunities, and you know, your city, the places that you represent, been under these constraints. I do understand it. It's a long-standing. I understand. You know, my community, my district, you know, black and brown people have had these type of situations, you know, forever. So believe me, I do understand you. You know, I'm just also looking at the pandemic that we are under and the constraints that so many are under too. And, you know, I just hope we can find a way that we can also support all the other folks who have families and they need to take care of their children. You know, they want to find a way out too. But again, I do understand what you're saying, and you fighting to represent your district is important. That fight is very, very important.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, everybody. I think the sentiments of what we're hearing kind of are everybody's general question. I think Representative Sandstead kind of knew that going into this, that it was going to be a part of our conversation today. I know that there's some paper mills that are shut down and idled in Duluth, and I'm concerned about our folks up in International Falls with Representative Eklund, and I think it's just a general, we find ourselves in a really tough spot. My question maybe is to Mr. Hagman. I heard recently that there was about $140 million a week in payments being made to folks on unemployment insurance. Can you tell us of that, is that a big portion of that part of the federal stimulus, $600 a week payment as well? I'm trying to separate the state obligations to what is being funneled through with the federal dollars as well. So if Mr. Hagman could answer that for us, that would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. About half, or maybe even a little bit more than half, of the money that we are paying out per week is through the $600 additional payment that's taking place.
So,
Baker.
Mr. Chair, thanks. And so just generally then, if everything stays the same and there's an extension and we don't get a ton of people back to work soon, we're on an average of about $70 million cash burn a week for unemployment insurance benefits. Is that a generally accurate number?
Mr. Hagman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I want to be fair to the complexity of the subject, I guess, and say that I'd much rather sit down and actually do the math on it. The amount that we're paying per week has been dropping, thankfully, as I think some folks have returned to work. We've also got kind of a muddle in our data right now because we've got that PUA program and then the other programs that we're running. So I think to be fair to the complexity of the question and to be able to, you know, move towards an estimation of where we think we land in so many weeks, we would want to do a more analytical approach to that rather than be kind of guessing that it's $70 million or $100 million per week. It's dropping every week. And we just honestly are so focused on getting folks that are eligible paid that we've not spent a lot of time doing analysis of the future of these things. And we regret that we can't do that, but it's sort of one or the other right now. And we're kind of balancing that in favor of helping Minnesota families pay their bills.
Mr. Hagman, why don't you see what you can find without getting distracting too much from making sure that families in Minnesota are receiving benefits as quickly as they can, and get back to Travis and let Travis disperse that out to the committee members. But having for 20 years tried to follow the numbers with unemployment, I'm going to tell you that they can confuse even after explanations quite easily. So I would ask you to make them as simple as possible. And if members have more questions, they do know how to get a hold of you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Representative Baker, did you have another question or not?
No, I think not, Mr. Chair. I think it was covered, but we're going to have to find out what this number is because others are going to be in line soon. So that's all. Yep. Thank you so much.
I understand that. Representative, let's see, who comes? Representative Zong.
I'm good, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Representative Zong. Did you have a question?
Nope. Representative Moran asked my questions.
Thank you. Representative Backer. And I want everybody to note that I've gotten both those, I have not gotten either one of those two mixed up yet today.
Well, Chair, I was just looking for the pleasure of being called Baker this morning. but anyways, I do appreciate that, and that's okay. So there could be a lot worse things being called than being called Baker. So a couple comments per se. First of all, I understand where the Iron Range is going, the challenges that they face. In Great Western Minnesota, we have that same economic diversity challenge. So one of the things that I'm just going to make a comment and not try to do a gotcha question, this is why it is so important to get Line 3 moving and also to open up other mining opportunities that are safe to the environment. Minnesota's have a wonderful history of doing things right. And we have seen constantly groups in Minnesota that have blocked economic development up on the Iron Range. Now, I've been up on the Iron Range. It's no different than what we do in Western Minnesota. We farm dirt, they farm rocks, okay? And I appreciated that time that I got to tour 2-3 years ago and so forth. But I really think this shows the importance and why us rural individuals are really united on it. Doesn't matter if you're GOP, doesn't matter if you're Democrats, that we need additional economic vitality. And this really shows why Line 3 is so important because that can be done safely, why opening up for other mining in the Iron Range is so important and so forth. So with that said, two other things I want to just comment on, Chair, and I will leave this, is I would, if we do this bill, I do think it's important that we include other rural areas. I mean, West Central Minnesota, we're having the same challenge. Now, we don't have the mining industry, one big industry that impacts. We have all these small industries that are being impacted in our neck of the woods. And I would be more open to see a smaller one. I think I represent a we had that comment earlier today, maybe 13 weeks. So I would ask the author to possibly consider that and open it up for other areas in greater Minnesota. And that's my comment. Thank you, Chair.
You know, Representative Backer, I throughout this whole meeting, I've been kind of happy that a good friend of mine, Jason George, has not asked to testify today. The last on my list here is Representative Beckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you, Representative Sandstead, for advocating for our way of life on the Iron Range. You know, and I also want to thank Mr. Arbogast and Mr. Pierce, my USW brothers, for your continued advocacy. You did a great job. You know, this is not about one community. This covers five legislative districts. There's workers in this industry that are covering five legislative districts, and that's just, Mr. Chair, that's just counting on one hand. I didn't try to go to two, so anyway. We've been working on economic diversity since I've been county commissioner and now as a state representative on the range, and it's tough. Everybody in the state knows how hard it is to try to get somebody to move to their community, whether it's a business of five or businesses 20. But right now, mining on the range is it. And, you know, there may even be a little bit of a national security question here on keeping these workers around for that extra 26 weeks, because if something happens where it's needed, we're going to need the Iron Range just like we've needed it in wars past. One thing that hasn't been talked about is the supply chain. It takes a long time to get pellets to the blast furnaces and other parts out east on the Great Lakes. So there may be a supply sitting there for when those blast furnaces open up, but it takes a long time for our taconite plants to recover and get the necessary supply out there. So that's why this extension is being asked for, because if there's a good economic recovery, traditionally iron mining lags behind because of those type of things. So once again, thank you, Representative Stanstead. I appreciate this bill, and I'm in full support of it. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Eklund, are there any other questions from the committee? Any other questions from the committee? Well, as a chair, I will make a couple comments and then turn it over to Representative Stanstead for final comments. So I don't see why somebody doesn't put an amendment or a bill in, and I will promise you a hearing on extending it another 13 weeks after what the feds are going to be done. I'm happy and open to that. I think we need to take care of the Minnesota that I've loved since birth, and I intend to love till I die. We are one state. We are one Minnesota, and we do take care of each other. And our unemployment division has proven that it can handle almost near impossible jobs. And I will second the comments earlier about the unemployment division. You have done Herculean task, and you've done it well. And some people have had their complaints, and we've all gotten them. And when we brought them to your attention, you know, you've dealt with them and dealt with them well. So I appreciate that. I hope this bill is not needed. But in the event that it is, I hope we as a state, we as a legislature, move this bill forward if and when it becomes necessary. And I will tell everyone that Representative Gunther probably remembers a past chair that tried to extend unemployment benefits to the iron ore industry on the range indefinitely one time. And he made a very impassionate speech multiple times on it. So I'm glad Representative Sandstead did not try that one. Representative Sandstead, if you have any closing comments for your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just want to say at the very end of this, this should never, ever be an us against them type of scenario. That is not my intent. My efforts here are to represent my constituents. That is what I'm elected to do, while I also acknowledge and represent members across the state of Minnesota. And legislation has been put forth in our last special session and even in regular session that I have been proud to support that has benefited metro and suburban areas. because, as I've said before, we all do better when we all do better. And it's speaking from a humanitarian point, it's our responsibility to help one another out. And we're all struggling. We are all having a hard time. Sometimes, as you've heard, like Representative Eklund mentioned, it's going to take a little bit longer for things to bounce back for us. We just do not have the opportunities that other places in the state do have. And I have to say to Representative Backer, thank you for your comments in terms of helping to diversify the economy in a responsible way with our environment. And I appreciate that very much, because that is what we do on the range. We do mining in a responsible manner, environmentally responsible manner. And again, I hope we don't need this. I hope we don't have to have it. But I also know from my life, it doesn't usually turn out that way. It just takes a longer time to come back online. And we can't have people continuing to move out of our districts, continuing to overpopulate suburban and urban districts, and put, you know, more of a strain on them. We have just a beautiful economy, a beautiful place to live, and we should have an economy that can support our way of life up here. Currently, we don't. We're going to need this support potentially. And I hope that we can just be there for one another, as I will be there for you in your districts. And nobody saw a pandemic coming. In closing, we can just say that. And I think that's the one piece of information we all agree on. Nobody saw this pandemic coming. And this is different for the Iron Range. And I need to really hammer this home. It's different. And it's different because it has wiped out absolutely every opportunity that may have existed outside of mining. And it's going to be a hard time getting back on our feet. So with that, I just hope we can stand together on this. Thank you for your great questions. Thank you for the robust conversation. And Mr. Chair, thank you for hearing this proposed legislation.
You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. That's what we do here. Members, see no other comments. See no other comments. I will adjourn this meeting of the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. Stay tuned. There are a number of things in the works right now. And watch your emails for, but someday I hope will be my last committee meeting. So thank you all for coming. Good night, or good afternoon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.